Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. It's always a pleasure to have Tom DiNapoli with us because he's really one of the best and most honest brokers in government. Welcome back, sir.
Alan, it's great to be back with you.
So I guess the first thing is the Bridge and Trust Fund report, which is coming out now. Are New Yorkers getting everything they need to? Is that trust fund being used for what it's supposed to be used?
Well, it's appropriate we start with that question because it's a locked box concept, which I know is what you've been promoting. You've been talking a lot about it of late. Good intentions set up to really be the way for dedicated revenues, much of it from the tax that people pay when motorists fill up their gas tank, to go into this lockbox with the intent that it would go to support on a pay-as-you-go basis our transportation projects, particularly the infrastructure related to transportation.
You mean building them?
Yeah, and repairing them, keeping them in good repair.
Okay.
And, you know, we have big infrastructure in our state. As opposed to what often is done, had been done in the past, is borrowing. Or what has happened too often in the past as well, diverting revenues to other purposes that were intended for pay-as-you-go capital projects related to transportation infrastructure. This is our third report, and what we find is a continued pattern where the intent of that lockbox to support road and bridge infrastructure is being diverted for other purposes. We've reported on this in the past. It continues to be a problem. Only now about 22% of those monies, in fact, go for pay-as-you-go projects. So what you're seeing is debt service is a big part of where the money's going. And this is the real area of concern. Agency spending, particularly with regard to the Department of Motor Vehicles, the Department of Transportation, has been offloaded to this trust fund.
So, in other words, let me get this straight, Tom.
Yeah.
So that means that instead of finding the regular money that we all pay taxes for, to make sure that this is all happening, the bridges are being repaired and everything else, the agencies are dipping into this segregated locked box.
Yeah.
And that's bad.
That's bad because there are certain revenues that are dedicated to this locked box. And it was not intended when it was created to be an offload for personnel costs. So personnel at DOT and Department of Motor Vehicles, they may be doing good work. Snow and ice removal, something important this time of year.
Sure.
But that's not a purpose for a capital expense for transportation infrastructure when we have tremendous needs out there. So we continue to say that we need to, and obviously you can't change this overnight. You know, you're talking about billions of dollars, but to have less than a quarter of that money be going for the intended purpose, that's wrong. We need to go back to a schedule now to offload back these expenses because we need to ensure the integrity of this trust fund. And there's no doubt that having a pay-as-you-go program for your capital needs with regard to transportation is a very smart way for us to manage those costs moving forward.
Now, Tom, you know that when you come out with a report like this, there are certain people who are going to be very angry at you because, you know, you're telling them that you're not using the money for the right things. And who do you have to go to make them use it for the right things? You have to go to the governor, don't you?
Oh, governor, legislature. This obviously needs to be a joint effort to turn it around.
Is it in the budget? Is that how this is determined?
It impacts on the budget because part of those expenses that you're offloading, you don't have to then spend from the general fund.
Right.
So that's where, you know, this began when you had earlier times of fiscal stress in the state. And instead of then when we got back into good times, reversing it stayed. This gimmick was what continued to be used. And what we're saying is it's time when we're all concerned about our roads and our bridges.
You bet. I don't want to go into the river like those people did all those years ago.
Yeah, and when you're paying your gasoline tax and you're told that a portion of this is going to a dedicated fund, you want to know that, in fact, that's happening. And that's not been the case. We do know in the report there's a slight increase in the percentage, but it's still less than a quarter of the money. That's unacceptable. We need to get back to a schedule, which over time, we're not saying it's going to happen overnight or in one budget, will return and restore the integrity of this fund.
Now, you're a friend of the speaker's. We know that. If you go to the speaker and say, hey, Shelley, this has got to be corrected, as well as the governor who prepares the budget in the first place, what are they likely to say to you?
Well, I mean, as I said, so the third report, Alan, that we've done.
It's the third time.
I think what they say is very nice. But, you know, that's why we'll keep at it. I mean, that's our role as controller, to call it as we see it, to be the independent voice and to take a long-term view. And look, I was in the legislature. You know, I understand when, especially at times of crisis, when things were done that perhaps weren't in the best interest. But we need to learn from our mistakes. And it's never too late to have a correction in course. And I think that's what this report really points to, that especially now that we're all concerned about aging infrastructure, this fund was set up to be the way to ensure that rather than going into debt to deal with infrastructure needs, we'd have a pay-as-you-go dedicated source of funding. We've subverted the intent of that program. We need to put it back in the original intended purpose and use. And that's why we'll keep issuing these reports until that correction happens.
Well, is there any way to make them do the right thing? Could you go to your friend Eric Schneiderman and say, sue the governor, sue
well,
the
legislature? Well, that probably wouldn't work in this case. So we'll hope that intelligence will prevail and our report will be read very carefully by the members of the legislature on the second floor, and they will come around to our way of thinking.
We're talking to New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. Okay, Tom, let's move on. Now, I need you to take off that sort of cellophane hat, green hat that you have on in front of you. And don't talk to me in sort of, you know, controller ease. I need to know what certain terms mean. What is fiscal stress?
Well, I think that term is a way of adding a cautionary light. Fiscal stress means that for a local government in this context, that based on the financial indicators that we have put out there, you know, have you had a deficit? What kind of short-term borrowing? What are your financials? What are your numbers? If you are headed in a negative direction on key indicators, you're headed for trouble. So fiscal stress means that your financial numbers are going in the wrong direction. It's an agnostic term in the sense that some of the reason for that may be that you made mistakes.
Wait, what does agnostic mean?
Well, I mean, it's not casting a judgment as to how you got there. Because one of the arguments is, well, we're in stress because the tax base is down because of the economy. We're in stress because we have to deal with the tax cap in New York now. We're in stress because state and federal aid has been cut back. You could also be in stress because the prior administration or your administration made some bad choices on the budget. So by agnostic, I mean it's not casting a judgment as to how you got there, but it's saying you got a problem. You have a problem with your budget, and the trends are that you could be headed to a crisis, which could be, as we see in other parts of the country, a bankruptcy. That is the most extreme point of stress.
So if you go,
and we don't want that to happen in New York.
So if you go to a place like Yonkers, or I'm not going to name names, but you know, you go to some of these places, and when they're really stressed out, they have to have a fiscal control board, right?
That's happened with Yonkers. It's happened Nassau County, where I live, mm-hmm. Troy, Erie County, Buffalo. Yeah, we've had a history with that.
So when they see you come in, they want a good report. They don't want to hear that they're in stress.
Well, you know, what we do is identify stress. And if you're not in stress, it's what we call no designation. So we're not necessarily giving a good housekeeping seal of approval, but we want to identify those that are in some level of stress. Because to your point, we don't want them to get to the point where they have to have a control board or some kind of a bailout. As happened, you know, Nassau County, you remember, was over $100 million. The reason that we don't want them to get to that point is we don't have money for a bailout anymore. It's gone. The state's trying to keep its own budget in balance. And the reality is I don't think there's a strong appetite for creating many more control boards. So we really do have to have, at the local level, an attempt to deal with these issues.
Wait. When you go in, they know if they're good. They have to know that they're close to the stress line, right?
You know, we certainly gave them advance notice as to what we were looking at, but it's very interesting. Some will say, oh, we knew that already. You're not telling us something we didn't know, but we want the taxpayers in the community to know.
Others will say helpful to them.
And it's totally meant to be helpful. And others will, in fact, say, we knew we had issues, but what you put out has made more clear what the issues are. If you're going to have to make tough budget choices at the local level, I think it's immensely helpful, not only for the elected officials, but for the people in the community to understand what they're really dealing with. We don't give, at a grassroots level, enough information to citizens. And a big part of why we're doing this fiscal stress monitoring system, besides the obvious of being an early warning to avoid a real crisis, it's really to empower citizens with more information about what's happening in their own community, be it their school district, their village, their town, their city, or their county.
But, Mr. Comptroller, certainly everything is political. You go into a city and you say you're close to the stress point, and you got somebody who's running the place, and they're not doing it well, and you're pointing that out, the implications are clear. Maybe somebody's going to run against them as a result.
Well, it's possible. But what I do hope instead happens, and what we see, is that the spirit that we have set up this program, which is let us know if you got a problem and we're there to help you, we can accelerate the support we can provide from the controller's office, audits, budget reviews, risk assessment, long-term financial planning. We also have in the state now the local government restructuring board that the governor and the legislature established. I sit on it, as does the attorney general and representatives from the governor's office. And so far, two municipalities have applied for that program, and you've been reading in the paper, the new mayor of the city of Albany, Kathy Sheehan, has indicated that she'd like to apply for it. So there are structures being put in place, different than the old model of a control board, to say to those that are facing the most extreme circumstances, we do want to provide help and assistance.
So when Mayor Jennings leaves Albany and Kathy Sheehan, the mayor, comes in, I'm just giving this as an example because this program is heard all over New York State. You know, I mean, you guys go in and you say, uh-oh, she got left with a load, you know, here. A lot of expenses, a lot of debt, and you know pretty well that this might be a real problem.
It could be. We haven't put out our numbers yet on the bigger cities in the state. That's to come. We're just putting out now villages. We have about 15 villages we've identified in stress. We did school districts a couple of weeks ago. It's based on the budget calendar. So, you know, we'll stay tuned. But Albany, Syracuse, Rochester, the older, bigger cities in the state, they've had real issues over a period of time. Population going down, older, poorer population left behind that needs more services. Albany obviously has the issue of so much of the property tax exempt because of state government. Syracuse, similar, very high percentage of tax-exempt property, which creates issues as well. So the local officials are not wrong in saying we're dealing with many trends, including the tough economy the past few years, state and federal aid being flat or decreasing in many circumstances. They're dealing with a lot. What we don't want to see happen in New York is that we don't want a Detroit here.
We don't want Detroit.
We do not want Detroit. Bankruptcy should not be anything
that
happen?
We should.
Of course, legally, it could happen. We've never had it in New York. You know, California, Stockton, other cities, yeah. And obviously Detroit being the big one. We've never had it in New York. It would be, I think, a terrible turn of events, not only for the people in that community. You turn your decisions over to a judge, and we see in Detroit there are all these lawsuits. There's no certainty.
What about the pensions?
The pensions, as you know, become an issue in Detroit. But I worry even more short term. What does it do to the standing of municipal and state credit worthiness?
Sure.
The increased costs of having a downgrade, which could affect everyone in the state, would really hurt every locality, not just the one that may be filing for bankruptcy. So it really is in our collective interest to keep an eye, make sure we don't have communities get to that point. And that's the purpose of this monitoring system. It's meant to be an early warning. It's meant to raise the red flag when there's a problem so we could avoid a financial crisis and a meltdown, as would be shown if you ever had a municipality talk about bankruptcy.
Tom DiNapoli, you're sitting on this fight that's going on. It is a fight between de Blasio and Cuomo over pre-K. Both guys are giving numbers, how they're going to pay for it, and all the rest of it. Do you become sort of a referee in this?
Well, my expectation is that this will be refereed in the end by the legislature as part of the negotiations.
On you to help them, right?
Well, you know, the challenge with this is it really, you know, there are different numbers being thrown out there, and we're obviously in the process of analyzing the governor's proposal. We're not analyzing the other proposals. But so much of this depends on when you would start it, what's the capacity, how quickly can you implement it. So,
yeah, de Blasio, let me just stop you and say de Blasio wants to go start now, basically.
Well, I think the governor does too.
Well,
it's just a question of how quickly.
A 5-year roll-in.
Yes, well, that's the real question. How quickly, if you had all the money that you needed, whatever that number is, how quickly, in fact, could it be implemented? But that's going to be more, I think, the negotiation that'll happen at the legislative level rather than, you know, calling on us. If someone calls on us and says you arbitrate, you know, we're available. But my guess is this will be handled at a different table than the controller's office.
Are the Republicans and Democrats, the Republicans in control of the Senate, allegedly, and are they on different sides on this issue of pre-K?
You know, I'm not there, so I can't say for sure.
Come on, you know everything.
Well, I don't know everything. I think that certainly in many of the suburban districts, you've had, if not full, half-day programs, which I think generally have been well-regarded in the communities. So many of those districts are represented by the Republican senators, so I think they understand the value of a program like this. Again, how do the numbers add up is going to be the question. The governor's made a commitment to have this program happen in the state. As you know, there are other proposals in the budget that could impact on the money that the state has, the tax cuts, for example, that the Republican senators seem to be very much in favor of, especially with regard to the property tax issue, which, as you know, was largely driven by the school expense. So, you know, it's very hard to take any one of these issues, you know, separately and in a vacuum. It all has to fit together in terms of the numbers. And that's the challenge of what we're all going through now. How do these numbers add up? Short term, how do we get this budget done so it could be in balance? But also longer term, how do you, on a recurring basis, align revenue and spending in the state? And that's been an elusive goal. And we're doing better. And I credit the governor and the legislature for doing better in that regard. But there's a lot at play in this budget proposal that will impact the out years that we're still certainly asking some questions about.
I want to talk to you about overtime. You've issued a very critical report, I thought, a very alarming report about how much state workers are working overtime. This has tremendous tentacles, doesn't it? Because if you give them more money, in some cases their pensions are based on how much they worked the last year, and there's been an informal system of giving a lot of overtime to the people who are going out. Is this really troublesome to you?
Well, picking up on the last issue, pension spiking, as it's often called, the report really points out that it's rare that someone gives themselves overtime when they do. It's usually because they're doing something wrong, right? You need to get overtime authorized by someone. If agencies are not controlling the overtime expense, the implications are not only in terms of the short-term cost, but longer-term impact on pension, because typically it's more senior people that, towards the end of their working career that get it. So that's a reason to be concerned. But in the very short term, Alan, our message is overtime is clearly becoming an expensive habit that state agencies are relying on. It's a record number, $611 million in overtime.
Right. Okay,
well,
so let's say—
I mean, the why is various reasons. You know, so in the case of some agencies, probably related to some of the cleanup after Sandy, and legitimate. In the case of the top agencies, though, that have continued to have the most overtime, Office of Mental Health, Office of People with Developmental Disabilities, Corrections, you know, so those that run institutions, be it prisons or hospitals or group homes, it's not related to any emergency. You continue to see a very heavy reliance on overtime to meet the 24/7 needs of those
programs.
Because
they don't have enough people working for
them. Well, but that's the next question. So you see how the state workforce has gone down, you know, and the unions have raised this, and, you know, I think it does need to be looked at. How does it all balance out? You're keeping headcount down to reduce cost, but you're having now a record cost in terms of overtime.
Sure.
And so as a management tool, we put this report out on a periodic basis to say, agencies, you need to look at this expense because it is a premium cost. And we're just looking at dollars and cents. What a report like ours doesn't look at, what about the employees that are working tremendous amount of overtime? Are they going to be able to provide, from a qualitative point of view, the same
exhausted
level of service? If they're exhausted. So we really think that agencies should look at this report, look at their trends, and really do more to control overtime. It's a record amount now spent on overtime. I think that's a clear red flag.
But isn't this the governor's fault? I mean, the agencies belong to him. Of course, I'm trying to trap you here, but...
Which, of course, I won't let you, but the agency heads should take a look at it. No, this is why we put this report out. So agency heads use this as a management tool. We're not casting a judgment, you know? Maybe he had good reasons for the overtime, but it's going in the wrong direction for many of the
Sounds
agencies.
Sounds to me, when you say it's going in the wrong direction, Thomas DiNapoli, you are, in fact, saying it's going in the wrong direction. That is a judgment.
Well, and that's the point of view of the control source, but what's done with it, that's the prerogative of the agency. And even you take OMH is one of the ones I mentioned earlier. They've actually started to go down. It's still very high, though. There's still over 60.
That's
over 60%
of
just the three. Yeah. I'm sorry. Mental health, corrections, and people with developmental disabilities. That's still over 60% of the overtime. Just those three agencies.
Well, I'll take you down this road just for a minute. I've been reading that Andrew Cuomo, the governor, wants to close down some of the prisons because we have a smaller prison population. Therefore, you close down some of the prisons. That means, obviously, there's going to be, because we have a prison industry in New York State, no matter what anybody says. And as soon as you close down a prison in an area, somebody's going to yell at you because, you know, somebody's husband can't have a job anymore. And when you do these reports, do you take that into consideration?
we look at the aggregate in terms of the facilities you have now and the staff you have.
Well, if you don't need them, theoretically, if you don't need them, why should you have them?
Well, that's certainly true. But you look at the case of overtime, obviously, from a staffing perspective, we clearly need more people hours to staff whatever facilities we have. So it needs to balance out in a more effective way than it does right now.
Okay. So there is this business where the governor has recommended the idea that you get a tax break if you start a business in or around.
Startup New York program.
Yeah. In or around the SUNY campus.
Yeah.
Is that a good idea?
Well, I think time will tell. I think all of us are focused on growth and creating jobs, and particularly for many of the regions north of the downstate suburbs, it continues to be a big issue. And in many of the communities, it's SUNY and the medical campuses and the medical facilities that are the big drivers of jobs and opportunities. So the theory is we've got these great higher educational institutions, often besides educating bright young people, developing research and products, technology. And is there a way to, in a sense, replicate some of what's happening here in the capital region with the Nano College, to have there be a greater partnership and synergy, if I could use that word, you know, the benefit of the mix of locating a startup business next to a higher education institute. You know, whether it makes sense to give the kind of tax break that's been given, you got a lot of the businesses out there that have been working very hard trying to keep things going,
right,
and they may not get the same. So look, I think we have to wait and see. Early reports, anecdotally, is that there's been a tremendous interest in the program. And
well, who would be interested if you don't have to pay taxes to start a business?
Well, folks that may be starting something up in another state, and they say, wait a minute, New York may be the place to go because they have this program. But I think it's too early to
cast
a judgment.
But you go into some of these places, Tom. I mean, your reports are famous for being accurate and tough. So, for example, here in the Albany region, we have this, as you've just mentioned, nanotech.
Yeah.
And it's run by a guy who makes more money than any other person in state government. Nobody, not the governor, anybody else. Elaine Calieros. Now, he becomes a very important player in the region because he's supplying all these jobs. And those are the people you would think that the controller's office really would have to take a close look at.
Well, and we've done some audits of what's happening there. And you know, I think you're right, though. It's generated tremendous economic activity. It's been viewed as a positive. They are talking about expanding the reach, having programs related in the Utica-Rome area to build on that. So, and look, the President of the United States has been there, you know, so I think it's viewed as a model. You know, the goal is to try to, I don't know that you can replicate something on that scale. And let's keep in mind, that initiative became successful after years of investment. I think it goes back to the original Governor Cuomo and legislative leaders like Shelley Silver and Joe Bruno, who put a tremendous priority on state support for that initiative. Startup New York is a much more modest approach than that. But we'll take a look. I think you got to give it time. Let's give it some time and see what the results are. It's too new a program to give a final judgment.
How are you, Tom, that we only have 2 minutes left.
So we have to talk about unclaimed funds before we go.
Okay, go ahead. Talk about that.
So we want your listeners to check our website, www.osc.state.ny.us, or call our 800 number, 1-800-221-9311, because you may have lost some of your money separated from a bank account or a check that wasn't cashed, turned over to the state. We're holding accounts worth $12 billion. And I know this has been an important time of year for WAMC. And Alan, I am leaving you with the paperwork because we checked and we found that WAMC has $150 in unclaimed funds that we want to return to you. So when you sign this paperwork or have David do it, we'll get that money returned
to
you.
David. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that's a lesson for your listeners that they may, either their name, their family member, a business, a not-for-profit they're a part of, go into our system, see if we owe you money. So here's $150 for you.
I actually looked at the list very early, and there was my son.
Yeah.
And he got his money back, whatever it was, and I don't think it put everybody in la-la land. Okay, I have one fast question for you, real fast, and that is, how are our investment funds doing, the pension funds which you run? I know that there's been talk that the governor would like to get his hands on those and put his own person in, you know, running a board of some kind. I'm a big believer in what you're doing because I know you surround yourself with real experts. But how are we doing?
And it's more accountability. Well, we put our estimate for the end of the calendar year 2013, which is our third quarter of our fiscal year, and we were up over $170 billion. That's over 10% return. We were doing real well by the end of the year. Obviously, as we know, this first quarter, the markets have been skittish. So, you know, we're not day traders.
The Fed is not doing what it was doing.
Well, we're not day traders, so don't look at the numbers every day. But obviously, this quarter is starting off in a more challenging way. But the main point is that we are in a much stronger position than we were just 4 or 5 years ago. We were able to cut the contribution rate last year because of that. And so I'm hoping
the state and the localities put
exactly, yeah. And taxpayers ultimately, yeah. Right? So we're certainly hoping that as the next couple of months go, as we end our fiscal year, which is the key number, March 31st, that's the audited number that we base our calculations on, that the markets will bounce back and we'll have another good year.
Well, Tom DiNapoli, I always love it when you come in and talk to us because, you know, you do it. And there are so many other people who won't because they just would rather not face the people. So we thank you so much for doing it.
Thanks, Alan.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.